I stopped, or mostly stopped, stuff shifting. My bedroom finally started staying under control for longer periods of time when I decluttered my living areas and kitchen and defined the purposes of those rooms. As I removed their clutter from my home, my bedroom was easier to maintain as well. I stuff shifted for years, even though I called it decluttering. I moved things from one area to another, assuming the problem was that I hadn't found the right way to store it, not that I had too much. When a moment of panic happened, because someone was coming over, I moved all homeless items to the bedroom to get them out of the way. The master bedroom was my dumping ground. Here's what I'm not going to tell you. A bedroom should be a sanctuary, a place of peace and rest and blah, blah, blah. Not that that isn't true. It's totally true. But knowing it was true wasn't the least bit helpful in my own quest for a clutter-free bedroom. My bedroom was the most overwhelming space in my home. The storage room I never realized was a storage room, but was totally a storage room. If that's you, and you're feeling angsty because you're just not ready to face your bedroom, don't. Wait. Move on to another space in your home or focus on the closet in the master bedroom. Closets get their own chapter soon. It's okay. Really. We could get all psychobabbly and talk about how I was putting myself last in my own home and that's why my own sleeping space, and sadly, my collaterally damaged husband's sleeping space, was not a priority. Or we could just admit that it was the easiest room to put off dealing with. Whatever. If you're ready to dive in, let's go. Grab a black trash bag and a donate box. It's the same thing every time, but please, don't reinvent the wheel in this room. Of all the rooms in my home, my own bedroom sent my brain firing off in all different directions. Before I established this process, I found myself doing a little here and a little there, and then spending 5 hours alphabetizing my husband's CD collection. The stuff in my bedroom was totally random. My efforts were completely random. But once I applied the strategies I developed in other overwhelming, but less overwhelming than this, spaces of my home, I finally made progress. Step one, trash. Start with trash. Trash is the easiest of the easy stuff. Throw things away. Stacks of random, unimportant papers, empty deodorant containers, tissue that missed the trash can last time you had a ferocious allergy attack, empty tissue boxes. Don't worry about digging and moving and sorting everything in every pile. Yet. Just grab the obvious trash. Step two, easy stuff. For a bedroom that's a dumping ground, this step is overwhelming. Don't let it be. When I say to do the easy stuff, I'm talking about the so ridiculously obvious that it isn't obvious anymore stuff. Like clothes on the floor. Don't get organized. We're not changing your ways or implementing long-term solutions today. Decluttering clothing is another chapter. Just pick up the clothes and start filling your laundry hamper or laundry basket or put them in a pile. A single, distinct pile. We're still on step two, but as you pick clothing up off the floor, you're going to find some duh clothing donations. Make a pile of them. I'm generally anti-pile, but this is a pile with purpose. It's a laundry pile. As in, those duh donations will go straight to your washing machine so you can put them straight into a donate box as you pull them out of the dryer. As a general rule, thrift stores do not wash clothing. You need to wash clothes that have been on the floor and are probably dirty, just like you'd wash them before you'd wear them. But this isn't the time for perfection or for letting laundry rituals justify procrastination. Did you know that many, many people don't sort laundry by color? Enough people love this method that I decided to try it. It's not my normal laundry strategy, but if I'm doing disaster recovery that involves clothing that needs to be washed before I donate, I wash it all together. Dump your donation pile in the washing machine, put the setting on normal, add some detergent, and start it running through the cycle. Now head back to the bedroom. Keep going with easy stuff. Clothes from the floor go into the dirty clothes bin. Clothes piled on that chair in the corner need to go back onto hangers and into the closet. Same goes for the ones draped over your exercise bike. Clothes are easy. But let's talk about something that will probably come up at this point in the process and that you may have already experienced in your efforts to declutter living areas and the kitchen. What do you do when the place where you'd put something is its own decluttering project that needs to happen? How do you avoid stopping what you're doing, working on that space, and getting completely off track? Remember the container concept. Any space that holds things is a container. And remember your current project. Right now isn't the time to clear out the closet. So if there truly isn't enough room to simply hang up the dress, practice the one-in, one-out rule. Choose one thing that deserves to be hanging in your closet less than the item you're putting in there. One thing that is less container-worthy than the thing in your hand. The one-in, one-out rule does nothing to make the closet better. But the closet isn't what you're working on right now. And the thing you took out of the closet is going straight into the donate box that's ready and waiting in the bedroom where you're already decluttering. Putting anything in the donate box or the trash bag is a decluttering win. Now let's get back to the easy stuff. As you clear the floor and surfaces of clothes, you'll likely, in my case, definitely, uncover things that were hiding under or among the piles of clothes. I once found, early on in my deslopification process, 5 sticks of deodorant. If you're finding such things and you start to feel exasperated with yourself, just keep doing the easy stuff. Berating yourself isn't easy. Taking 5 sticks of deodorant to the bathroom drawer, where you'd look for them first, is easy. Go ahead and do it. Another thing I find a lot of when I excavate a messy bedroom is hangers. Oh, my word, the hangers that hide on the floor. Grab them and take them where they go, you know, to the closet. Hangers are a great example of how taking things where they go immediately doesn't necessarily mean taking them individually. Individually would mean 1,000 separate trips, so I look around and grab as many hangers as I can carry, since I'm going to the closet anyway. Now make another run through the room with the black trash bag. Each layer of clutter that's peeled back reveals more trash. And I know we're spending more time on easy stuff than in most other chapters, but that's the reality of a dumping ground. So many of the individual items are easy, but together, in a big floor covering pile, they're overwhelming. Once the floors are generally clear of easy stuff, move on to the bed. Make it. Making the bed is easy. If you're working in this room around the change of a season, remove the out-of-season bedding that's swatted up at the foot of the bed. Step 3. Scan the room for does. You very likely found some as you worked on the easy stuff, but take a quick and purposeful look around for boxes of outgrown clothes that somehow ended up in this room instead of the trunk of your car. You'll also find that some of the things dumped in here in moments of stuff shifting are now easy because your view of clutter has been changing as you've worked on other areas of your home. Once you've made your way through the top layer of trash, easy stuff, and does, start working on individual piles, starting with the most visible ones first. This is the not-so-easy stuff, the stuff that makes you want to keep pretending this room doesn't exist. If you are sure an individual pile is full of difficult emotional clutter, look again for trash within that single pile. I suppose it's possible there's no trash in that pile, but prove it. Do not assume you know what's in the pile. Look. Always look. No matter how convinced I am that I know what is in a pile, I'm wrong 93.792% of the time. Always. Always look. When I decluttered a cabinet in our game room recently, I was completely confident I knew what was in a large white box decorated with childhood drawings by my, now aged 50, husband. I knew it was filled with penciled drawings of Batman and Robin and various other muscly fighting men. I was confident I'd opened it before and seen exactly that. I was so sure I almost didn't open the box. But then I reminded myself, I have to look. I can't assume. I pulled off the lid and found a 4th chess set, as in I had already uncovered 3 other sets during that same decluttering project. The 4th, y'all. I can justify 1 chess set, but we won't be organizing a chess tournament anytime soon. No matter what you assume is in that pile, look. When I look, in addition to trash and easy stuff, I often find IBM tees, I've been meaning tos, or WDIHTs. Why do I have that? Those are does. Don't spend energy or emotion on does, because plenty of other things will require energy and emotion. Just stick them in the donate box. Get the trash out, take easy things to their established homes, put does in the donate box. Step 4, ask the decluttering questions. Finally, it's time for the decluttering questions. You can ask them at any point, but I've waited until now because making a visible impact by doing the easy stuff first is key to gaining momentum in a difficult space like this one. But now you're tackling stacks and piles that aren't easy, so the decluttering questions are essential. In my bedroom, there's a section of floor space just outside the paths we take to go from the bedroom door to the bed to the master bathroom and closets. That rarely trodden section of floor attracts things that aren't easy, things that don't have an established home. Clearing that space of clutter makes a shocking impact on the overall room. A clear floor makes a room not look wackadoodle. That spurs me to keep going. So item by item in that space, and then working through other visible piles, I ask the decluttering questions. Decluttering question number 1. If I needed this item, where would I look for it first? No analysis, no angst, no deep thinking allowed. Just follow your instinct and take it there. If you don't have an instinctive answer to give, ask question number 2. Decluttering question number 2. If I needed this item, would it ever occur to me that I already had one? If not, it goes in the donate box. Ask these questions until the pile is gone. Move to the next visible pile and continue working your way through the entire room's visible spaces. Step 5, make it fit. Once you've eliminated the piles of randomness, it's time to talk containers. A big part of seeing the room as a container is defining the purpose of the room. A bedroom is for sleeping. It needs to hold a bed, and the bed needs to be easily accessible. Stacks of books creating a maze that leads to the bed aren't okay. This is a bedroom. But a bedroom is also referred to as so-and-so's room. My husband's and my room is our room. My son's room is the boy's room, and my daughter has a room. Other areas of the home are communal, but bedrooms are where individuals keep personal treasures. Designating spaces within the room for personal treasures goes far in keeping a bedroom under control. I have a table where I keep book writing stuff that needs to not be subject to the rest of the house. My husband has a cabinet for his music collection. My sons have certain drawers that are theirs to fill as they please. Each of these things is a container. They limit how much we keep. Surfaces. Let's talk about surfaces and not just flat ones. For years, I had a big, comfy chair in the corner of my bedroom. I loved its bigness and its comfiness, but it was almost always covered in random clothes, so I never actually sat in it. In fact, if I ever desperately needed to sit in that chair, which happened no more than 3 times in the years it was there, I had to first move all the stuff off it. That chair wasn't serving the purpose of a chair. I couldn't sit on it. It was a dumping ground and a constant eyesore in a room where I struggle anyway. I did what always works when I need to stop piling things on a piece of furniture. I got rid of the furniture. I gave away the chair. Habits, schmabits, it wasn't happening. That convenient spot plus my tendency to pile things on convenient spots were too much. I couldn't fight it. Once the chair was gone, the pile was gone. If a furniture piece has a purpose, that's wonderful, as long as it fits within the container that is my bedroom. But the chair by the side of the bed, no matter its intended purpose, only served the purpose of collecting a mess. Removing the chair removed the mess. Drawers. I told you we were going to tackle closets on their own because closets are closets. Rooms on their own that basically encourage the stashing of stuff. But drawers in dressers that are in the bedroom are part of the bedroom. First, consolidate. Put socks together, undies together, and t-shirts, shorts, and sweaters together. If you have drawers to designate to each category of clothing, do that. Drawers are containers. They are natural limits to how much you can have of whatever is in them. You can have as many socks as your sock drawer will hold. You can have as many pairs of workout shorts as your workout shorts drawer will hold. And if you only have one drawer for all of your workout clothes, then you can only have as many workout clothes, leggings, shorts, and tops combined, as your workout clothes drawer can hold. As you consolidate and make things fit, accept your reality. If you have more workout clothes than will fit in your drawer, ask yourself if you buy workout clothes more often than you wear them. If so, they don't deserve drawer space more than the clothes you do wear. Or maybe you live in athleisure wear and can ditch the clothes you avoid because they don't stretch. If you need to put something in a drawer that's already full, use the one in, one out rule. Take out a less drawer-worthy pair of socks to make room for the more drawer-worthy pair. Consolidating reveals does. As you're consolidating, match the socks. If there are odd ones, throw them away. As you put t-shirts together, purge the ones you only kept for when you were completely desperate. Get rid of the shorts you never wear because they give you a wedgie. Basically, be realistic about whether you have passed up the clothes in your drawers again and again. If you do the sniff test on something from the floor instead of wearing the top that's in the drawer, it's a duh. Keeping it up. Please know, I am still struggling with keeping my master bedroom under control consistently. And though it has improved dramatically over the years, I will likely always struggle with it. The more often I go through these steps, the faster I get this room under control each time. I still work through the steps every time I work in there, even when I'm just cleaning up and not officially decluttering, simply because I need focus. The more often I go through these steps, the more often I look around after step three and raise my eyebrows in surprise because I'm done. Done. After step three, y'all. One day, as I was diving back into this project, lamenting that it was the bane of my existence to have a magically self-recluttering bedroom, in the middle of my inner tirade, I realized I was done. The room looked fine. I realized that sometimes what I think of as an entire decluttering project with a capital D and a capital P is actually just cleaning my room, just picking up. It will happen, eventually, if you keep at it. Once I realized this, I was more easily motivated to just pick up in there. And once I was willing to just pick up in there, I did it more often. And the more often I did it, the more often it was clean and door leave openable. Chapter 15, Closets and Clothes. In this chapter, I talk about clothes and the closets that hold them. I'll cover storage closets, storage spaces, in another certainly wordy chapter coming soon. If you use your closet for both clothing and general storage, look at chapter 17 to help you work through the storage items. I'm going to focus almost exclusively on clothing in this chapter to prevent confusion. Just know that if your attempts to store non-clothing things in this space are making your clothes spill out of the closet, that's a problem. We'll follow the steps to work through an overwhelming mess, though there are some variations when it comes to clothing. Step 1, trash. Clothing as trash? Maybe. Not that we're necessarily going to throw clothing in the trash, though we might. I'm talking about stuff that obviously can't be worn. Ripped things, stained things, faded beyond usability things. If you are confident that you have nothing unwearable in your closet, yay for you. Look anyway. I have a unique ability to think an item of clothing is perfectly fine because I love it or I love the memories of it, only to one day have the truth slap me in the face. I'm looking at a photo of it, or I'm folding it while a friend is sitting in my living room, and suddenly that top reveals itself as the out-of-style, unflattering garment that it is. For real. It's embarrassing. When I was writing this book and more than a little stressed out, I decided to try something I'd always wanted to do that I was positive would make my life easier. I decided to take our family's dirty clothes to a local laundromat that offers wash and fold service. I was so excited to have someone wash and fold our laundry. I loaded up 2 large laundry baskets with our clothes from the week before. As I lugged the second basket onto the scale, they charge by weight, I saw a frayed t-shirt collar sticking up from the pile. I recognized the t-shirt as one my son wears often, but didn't think much of it until the washer/folder filled out my ticket. She added the weight of the two large baskets together, multiplied the price per pound, and calculated tax. I would be paying $50 to have someone wash and fold my laundry. Immediate decision number one. I'm going to keep doing my own laundry like I've been doing for the past almost 30 years. I am way too cheap to pay $50 for someone to do what I can totally do but just didn't want to do this week. Immediate decision number two. That tattered collar t-shirt needs to go. I may be too embarrassed to yank it out of the basket and ask her to reweigh, but I am definitely never again paying good money to have it washed, or even good money for the soap and water required to wash it in my own home, thank you very much. In that moment, my eyes were opened to the reality of that t-shirt. I had a reason to see my clothing differently, and I saw that t-shirt was trash. You have a reason to see your clothing differently. The reason? You're decluttering. Go look. If you don't find a single item of trash clothing, great. But most likely, you will. While you're in there, holding a trash bag anyway, remove non-clothing trash. Step two, easy stuff. Easy stuff might be coats someone hung in this closet even though you have an established coat closet elsewhere. It might be Halloween costumes that have a designated tub up in the attic but that you never put away last year. The only thing that has to be done with this easy stuff is to take it where it goes. No decisions, analysis, or even questions needed. Step three, duh clutter. Look for does. Does are clothes that aren't unwearable, but that you know for a fact you'll never wear. WDIBTs. Why did I buy that? And SWDMMTIWWTs. Seriously, why does my mother think I would wear that? No angst, no questions, just does. Step four, ask the decluttering questions. The two decluttering questions don't work as well for clothing as they do for other things. You look for clothing in the closet, and we've already removed the easy stuff that goes somewhere other than the closet. If question number one helps, use it as you hang clean clothes or fold them to put on shelves. For question number two, do a scan of the closet, trying to be realistic about whether you'd ever go looking for that blue sweater or those purple boots. If that helps, great. If it doesn't, move on. Because focusing on the container concept is the best way I've found to declutter clothing. Two reasons why decluttering clothing can be difficult. First, you must accept that clothing can be clutter. I honestly had no idea. My thinking, if I stopped to think about it, went like this. Clothing is useful. I have to have it. Socially, there is no way around it. Useful stuff can't be clutter. But as I decluttered, found my clutter threshold, and experienced how much easier life was with less stuff, I started seeing all the things in my home differently. I accepted that useful things can most definitely be clutter. Anything that consistently gets out of control is clutter, and clothing was consistently out of control in my home. Clothing was clutter. But another reason I found it so hard to declutter clothing was I never felt like I had enough. Even though floors and chairs were covered in clothing and my laundry piles were almost as tall as me, I felt like I needed more clothing. I call this the vicious cycle of excess. The vicious cycle of excess occurs specifically with things that need consistent maintenance or cleaning, things like clothing and dishes. I wear clothes every single day. Wearing clothes makes them dirty. Dirty clothes need to be washed. When I had no consistent laundry routine, I consistently ran out of clean clothes. Running out of clean clothes made me do panic-stricken, frantic emergency loads of laundry. That panicked, frantic feeling caused me to assume I needed more clothes, even though there were piles of dirty clothes waiting to be washed. I bought more clothes so I wouldn't run out as quickly, hoping to avoid that panicky feeling as often. But then, because I could go longer before I had to wash clothes, I did go longer. The piles of dirty clothes were larger because they now included the additional clothes I'd purchased and were even more overwhelming. I put off doing laundry even longer, waiting until I had to do emergency loads and feeling like I didn't have enough. So I bought more. Creating a laundry routine helped me gain a realistic understanding of how many clothes we had and showed me which clothes were clutter. I am not going to give the details of my laundry routine, mostly because I did that in my last book, but I am going to tell you how finding a laundry routine that worked consistently and long-term in my home completely changed my understanding of clothing as clutter. I'd always known clothing needed to be decluttered regularly due to growing children, changes in tastes, and so on. But I didn't know that even stuff that fit my body or my kids' bodies and was non-hideous might need to go. When I started consistently washing, drying, folding, and putting away all the clothes in my house on a weekly laundry day, clutter clothes were ridiculously obvious. Clue number one. Once all our clothes were clean, it was not physically possible to put them all away in the drawers and closets. Clue number two. Once all our clothes were clean consistently, we chose to wear certain things again and again and again. By now, I'm guessing the container concept came to your mind when I mentioned clue number one. You're smarter than I was because I didn't understand right away. We wore the same clothes every week. When they were all clean on Monday evening, we each chose our favorite shirts to wear on Tuesday morning, and our favorite undies, and our favorite yoga pants. Fine, the yoga pants thing was just me. We had favorites, and identifying our favorites made decluttering simple because we could easily identify which things weren't our favorites. We saw the dividing line between the things we liked wearing and the things we only wore if we had nothing else to wear. If you are acting on each thing in the book as you read it, go move the donations from the last chapter into the dryer and fill your washing machine with a load from the pile of dirty clothes. Because even though clue number two makes deciding which clothes to keep easier, there is still clue number one to deal with, and we'll deal with it by using the container concept. Step five, make it fit. The closet itself is your container. The sizes of existing shelves and rods determine how much clothing you can keep. Decluttering does not involve finding a way to install new rods so you can justify keeping more clothes. Decluttering is getting rid of enough so the clothing that's left fits easily on the rods you have. So even though you have clothes in the washing machine, go ahead and declutter to the point that the clothes you have fit into your closet. Eliminate some things by asking, "What do I hate?" You know, because I've told you, that I avoid letting emotions into my decluttering process. I do much better when I stick to facts, like the physical size of the closet space I have available. But I am okay using darker emotions to declutter clothing. Clothing is strangely emotional in nature. The does are already gone, so I ask a pickier question. What has one characteristic I hate? I may love one thing about a jacket. It's my absolute favorite color. I walked straight to that jacket the moment I entered the store or the garage sale. I was thrilled at the price and I love the fabric. But the sleeves are too tight. They dig into my armpits and make me feel claustrophobic. Hating the sleeves means I hate the jacket. If I hate the jacket, I need to donate the jacket. Step 5.1, consolidate. Don't pull everything out of your closet. There should, hopefully, be some wiggle room after you purged the trash and stuck the stuff you hate in the donate box. Put all your black slacks together. Put your black dresses together. Put sleeveless, colorful tops together. This isn't an exact science, so just go on instinct, and the process will take shape as you go. If you have 15 black dresses, I'm not judging because I totally understand. Within that group, put the sleeveless ones together, the long-sleeved ones together, and the ones with some sort of pattern together. Now that all of your black dresses are together, has your perspective changed? Do some of the 15 reveal themselves as trash or does? Maybe the cotton one is obviously faded when you see it next to the others. Maybe now you remember trying on the one with the flouncy skirt every time you want to wear a black dress, but taking it off and wearing the one with the straight skirt instead, every time. So go through again and pull out does that are obvious now that you've consolidated. Then remove less favorite things until the clothes that are left fit comfortably in this space. But know this, you don't have to get rid of a single black dress. Your closet is your container. And if you passionately love all 15 black dresses, keep them. If black dresses take up your entire closet, that's fine. You just need to be ready to wear nothing but black dresses for the rest of your life. Because if they take up the entire closet, everything else will need to go. This is your house, and what you keep in your closet is your decision. It's okay. I keep things that make people think I'm crazy, too. For my daughter's 11th birthday, she invited a bunch of friends over for a slumber party. Besides the fact that they were unbelievably loud all night long, they were truly a joy. As moms arrived the next morning for pickup, the girls were parading through my living room wearing real formal dresses. They were thrilled to choose from ball gowns and off-the-shoulder satin formals and gold lamé bubble-skirted dresses. They were wearing my complete collection of high school formals. One mother could not believe I still had my high school formals. I just smiled and laughed, but I'll analyze a little for the purpose of this book. We all know it wasn't because I've been perfectly organized for the past 25 years. I still have them because they fit in my container. As I cleared my own closet, my daughter was quickly growing out of her princess dresses. When we got rid of her costume stash, my old formals moved into her closet. Her closet had plenty of room, since she's morally opposed to wearing hanger-worthy clothes. Other than formals, but whatever. I'm not going to tell you to get rid of any one specific thing unless it's causing danger to you or your family. But you also don't get to keep everything. You can keep whatever you want to keep as long as it fits in your container. If you want to keep every formal dress you've ever owned, but that leaves no room for any of your current wardrobe, you'd better be fine with wearing lace-covered taffeta to work tomorrow. The container decides how much you can keep. You decide what you keep. Viewing my closet as a container was incredibly freeing. I didn't have to decide if I loved something enough to keep it. I just had to determine if it fit in the container. Step 5.2, purge down to the limits of the container. But what about when the laundry is done? Don't panic. Some clothes will reveal themselves as container unworthy as you pull them out of the dryer. You'll remember throwing them on the floor because they were too small, too itchy, or too wonky. Keep a donate box by the dryer so you can stick them immediately in there. As you put clean clothes away, place them with their consolidated group. If there's no room in the closet, decide if you're willing to get rid of something else to make room. The one-in-one-out rule. If you've worn it recently, you'll likely decide it deserves hanging space. So the question is, what deserves hanging space less? Nothing personal. Black pants, you're perfectly fine. But if I have to choose between you and the pair in my hand, I choose these. How to get rid of the clothes you want to get rid of. Wearable things that you won't wear should be donated. But what do you do with non-wearable things? Note, decisions like this cause people like me to hyperventilate. Different people have very different opinions on this subject. Allow me to share the perspectives of the different camps. One camp genuinely cares about people and hates to throw something away that someone somewhere would be grateful to have. What if a child hasn't had a change of clothing in weeks and would be grateful for this shirt with a hole under the arm? But I just threw it away, and now that child can't perform on her standardized test because she's so self-conscious about her dirty shirt with a big hole that isn't hidden under her armpit. And then the other camp, which also has good hearts, throws away anything with the smallest blemish in the trash because they believe it's morally wrong to give something to the poor that you wouldn't wear yourself. I'm fine with either of these perspectives, as long as it means getting clothing you don't need out of your home. But then, there are the people who send me emails. completely stressed out because they have read scathing articles on the internet written by people in both camps. They are paralyzed because they simply don't know which way is best. Their homes stay cluttered with clothes they know they don't want because they can't get rid of those clothes for fear they're doing it wrong. And that is the only thing that truly is not an option at all. To keep stuff you know you don't want because you're so stressed out over the best way to get rid of it. If you're currently paralyzed, pick one and go with it. And know that the goal is to get to a point where you never again need to do a huge bag loads full purge. Once you're living within the limits of your closet, you won't have to be this stressed anymore. Here are two valid options for getting rid of imperfect clothing. Cut them up into rags and use the rags to clean gross messes. Throw the rags away without guilt because now they're gross. That's a valid option and I've done it. But the container concept still applies. I keep rags in my laundry room in a container. That container is the limit to how many rags I can keep. Once that container is full, rag-worthy clothing needs to go in the trash. Or, please listen to this next section carefully. If you feel the backs of your upper thighs tightening in righteous indignation, keep listening to the end, okay? You can donate these imperfect items of clothing if the place where you donate clothing wants stained and torn clothing. I used to get angsty and analytical about such things. Then I sat in a presentation by a woman who runs a local charity with a thrift store in my town. Her presentation was about the work they do, but she made a point to ask that we pretty please go ahead and donate stained or torn clothing to their thrift store. Yes, really. They sell these unwearable clothes to a rag maker by the pound, and every cent they get from every ounce of imperfect clothing goes to their cause. She begged us not to throw away imperfect clothing. And then another reseller in my town gave me the exact same spiel when he was picking up donations from my home. He brought it up. He asked me not to throw away unwearable clothes, but to give them to him instead. Really. So it may be worth your time to ask your local donation place. But let me be clear. The goal is to get stuff out of your house. If a 5-minute phone call to your favorite donation place will help you get stuff out of your house quickly, make the call. But if the dread of communicating over the phone with people you don't know or the paranoia of doing the wrong thing keeps you from doing anything at all, I'm giving you permission to throw away unwearable clothing. Do whatever makes it possible for you to start. Just know that if your local donation place does want unwearable clothes, they still need to be clean and dry. Stained is a very different thing than dirty. If you wouldn't wear it in this state of cleanliness, wash it before you donate or throw it away. Perfection isn't going to happen. You're overwhelmed. But as you change your view of stuff and learn to declutter at the speed of life, you move toward being able to do things more idealistically in the future. Right now, you just need to get going. Other clothing-related things to consider. T-shirt quilts. Have you seen T-shirt quilts? Quilts made from the T-shirts a student collects during his or her years of school. This is an awesome idea, and I'd love it if someone did that for me. My mother made a quilt out of my childhood dresses, and I treasure it. But here is a question to consider. Would I actually ever do this? Either do it myself or pay someone to do it? Yeah, that's a no. If you answered yes, designate a container. Do the research. Learn how many t-shirts are needed for the type and size quilt you want, and then find a container that fits that number of t-shirts. Find the container, the room or shelf in your home where you will store this container as you collect t-shirts, and start putting quilt-worthy t-shirts in it. Once that container is full, you'll need to use the one-in, one-out rule if you get a new one that just has to be part of the quilt. If you've already collected, hundreds of t-shirts with the ambiguous idea that one day you might make a t-shirt quilt. Choose your favorites up to the number of t-shirts you'll actually need for the quilt. If you love the idea of a t-shirt quilt, great, make it happen. But never letting go of a single t-shirt because you have a vague notion that a t-shirt quilt is a cool idea isn't an option. Sorry. If your kid is now a grown adult and you have no plans to make the quilt or hire someone else to make the quilt, but can't get rid of the t-shirts, don't skip the dreams chapter that's coming up. Use the laundromat. If the reason you can't move forward on decluttering clothing is the sheer volume of dirty clothes, consider spending an afternoon or a day at a laundromat. If you're that overwhelmed, washing all of your clothes at one time may help you break your paralysis. Just be sure to take a donate box or 10 donate boxes with you so you can declutter the does as they come out of the dryer. Basically, do whatever needs to be done to purge the clothing in your home to the point where you can manage it. I've covered the most common excuses, but work to identify your uncommon ones and break through your unique hang-ups to gain control of your closets. Chapter 16, Craft Rooms and Hobby Spaces. Are you wearing steel-toed boots? Because I'm going to step all over your feet. To be clear, I'm not talking only to crafters. I'm talking to anyone with a hobby. Airplane model putter-togetherers, paint-by-numbersers, fly fishermen thingamabob makers, knitters, scrapbookers, fishing reel repairers, whomever. And also to be clear, I'm not talking only to people who have designated rooms for such hobbies. I'm talking to you all, even those whose unique hobbies I didn't mention and even those whose craft room is a corner of their living room. And to be even clearer, I'm not saying you need a craft room, telling you how to turn a closet into a craft room, or even pointing out the horrors of a craft room and telling you to get rid of yours. I'm talking about whatever situation you have in the house you've got. Because if there is something I can assume about the people who relate to my clutter struggles, it's that they have hobbies, lots of them. When I was coming up with that list of examples, I asked my followers on social media for examples of hobbies that require supplies. Oh, wow, did I ever get answers? I got hundreds of answers, and most people shared long lists of various hobbies they loved. This is a common trait among people who struggle with clutter. They're interesting, and they like interesting stuff. But before we get to the steps for working through an overwhelming mess in this space, let me ask you an important question. Is your hobby actually your hobby? Is, not was, and not hope to be one day so I'd like to be prepared. Is. We'll dive deep in the chapter about dreams and decluttering, but for now I'm just asking the question. I want you to think about this. So as we discuss the realities of this space, you'll already be thinking about whether or not you have the passion to do what needs to be done. Step one, trash. Trash is the easiest of the easy stuff. Grab the black trash bag and start throwing away trash. Paper scraps, empty packaging, candy wrappers. Focus first on surfaces or trash in the visible places. We're following the visibility rule to prioritize rooms, but also within the rooms themselves. The goal is to declutter at the speed of life, and who knows when life will happen and this decluttering project will have to be paused. Step two, easy stuff. Start looking for easy stuff. What has an established home somewhere other than where it is? Take it there now. Move things to their decision-free homes within the room or in another part of the house. That's easy. Step three, declutter. Look for obvious donations, things that make you roll your eyes, shake your head, and wonder aloud why you even have them. Stick those in the donate box. Step four, ask the decluttering questions. If you start moving something that should be easy and feel a slight hesitation, go ahead and ask yourself the first decluttering question. Decluttering question number one. If I needed this item, where would I look for it first? In this room, decluttering question number one is everything, and you need to ask it about any item that's staying in this room. I'm guessing you put a lot of time into this hobby space when you first established it. You had big daydreams about all the time you'd spend in here and all the amazing things you'd create. Maybe this space was, once upon a time, an organizing project. There's a big difference between where you would look for something first and where you decided it should go during a big organizing project. If you'd first look for colored paper in the accordion file you decoupaged with the wrapping paper from your wedding shower, great. Put the colored paper there. But if you automatically open the bottom drawer of the desk when you need neon green paper, that is where neon green paper needs to go, because that is how the decluttering question works. You wanted a space for your craft stuff, right? You dreamed it would stay neat and orderly and make your supplies easy to find, right? Easy to find means something's in the first place you look for it. This was a major mindset shift for me. I made a conscious decision to organize my spaces for how we live. I stopped putting things in super logical, well-thought-out places and instead put them where we look for them. Once I did this, our spaces functioned better and stayed under control longer. That's another plug for just decluttering instead of organizing. The second decluttering question will come in handy in this room as well. Decluttering question number two. If I needed this item, would it ever occur to me that I already had one? Sometimes, lots of times, hobby rooms become rooms of randomness. Cool stuff gets shoved in the hobby room because there isn't another place for it in the house. Or maybe your brain thinks of this as the wouldn't that be cool room instead of the scrapbooking room. If there's no answer to question number one, ask the second question. And like always, if there was no answer to question number one, the answer to question number two is probably no. You wouldn't look for it. Maybe someone gave you everything you need to build designer birdhouses because they know you like to build things. You dumped all the parts in here because birdhouse building is crafty, but you have no desire to build birdhouses, so you'd never look for birdhouse building supplies. Donate them. Another category of things you'd never look for is maybe I could use this stuff. Stuff you collected for your jewelry making hobby. You bought it for cheap or accepted it when a friend was decluttering her craft room, even though you knew you'd probably never use it. Question number two exists to help you realize that even though you love making bracelets, you never go looking for S-hook clasps because you're more of a toggle clasp kind of bracelet maker. Step five, make it fit. It's time to implement the container concept. As I'm sure you can predict, the container concept is really important in hobby spaces. Step 5.1, consolidate. Maybe putting neon green paper in the drawer where you'd look for it made you happy until you realized there were stacks of paper scattered throughout the room. You tried to put them all together, but by the third or fourth deposit, the drawer was full. That drawer is a container. It's the limit to how much paper can go inside, and possibly it's the limit to how much paper you can keep. Limiting paper can be painful. Paper is useful, and you'll probably use all of it eventually. But if there is more paper than can fit in the drawer, you can't fit it all in the drawer. Pre-deslobification process, I would have immediately started shoving paper into another drawer, or come up with a fancy new system, like an accordion file decoupaged with wrapping paper from my wedding gifts. But we've already determined the drawer is where you look first for colored paper. The three choices I thought were my only choices before I understood the container concept. Number one, shove. Keep shoving. Smush and push and close the drawer as far as you can. Stop looking in that general direction unless you absolutely have to. Number two, get on the internet to learn how organized people store colored paper. Spend money on a fancy paper organizing system or give up because I didn't have money to spend. Number three, fill another drawer and then another with colored paper. Feel discouraged because I don't have the money for another 10-drawer contraption to store the rest. Or if I do have the money, feel discouraged because this room won't hold another contraption and I don't have the money to buy a new house. Now that I understand the container concept, I know my favorite paper goes in the drawer first, and any paper that doesn't fit in the drawer goes in the donate box. The drawer is the container. It limits how much paper I can keep. I'm not saying I can't designate another drawer for paper if I really need more paper and there's another drawer available. But if using another drawer would mean displacing scissors and glue and the hole punch, I have to stop and consider the reality of how much colored paper I actually need. How much colored paper do I use and how often do I use it? And am I fully aware of how much I have? If you know you'll use every last piece of the multiple jumbo packs you found in random places, and you'll use them up before you get the urge to grab another jumbo pack, you might need 6 drawers full of colored paper. But maybe, just maybe, you don't. Maybe consolidating the stacks of colored paper pushed your reality check button. Maybe you realized you grab a new package of colored paper every time you go to the craft store. Part of what you're doing in the craft room, or fishing lure room, or sports equipment storage corner, is clearing the vagueness. You're eliminating the vague feeling you experience in the paper aisle that makes you grab more paper because you're not sure how much you already have at home. That's one of the best perks of decluttering, awareness of what you have. You knew you had colored paper, and you even knew where you'd look for it. That's why you flew through the 2 decluttering questions. Step 5.2. Purge down to the limits of the container. Make it fit in the container is where you're stuck. You had no idea how much colored paper you had, so buying more made sense. You had no idea because colored paper was spread randomly throughout the room or cabinet or space or your house. It wasn't in its container. But what about now? How do we solve this very real paper dilemma right this second, in this moment, so we feel like the room is actually decluttered when we're done? We face reality. If you consistently go through 4 packages every single week, you need to keep the paper. Make room for it by clearing other drawers of things you don't use. If you have a specific project that requires 4 packages of paper and it's already on your calendar, not a vague, maybe if that ever happened, I'd be ready project, you need to keep the paper. But it may not need a 2nd, 3rd, and 4th drawer, because as soon as you're done decluttering the craft room, you're going to create the file that needs to be printed and start printing. If that's your situation, move the paper that won't fit in the drawer to the printer now. But if, just if, and to be clear, this is probably the case for 9.989 out of 10 people who are reading this book right now, you don't already have plans to use 4 full packages of colored paper over the next 2 weeks, stick the extra paper in the donate box. Ouch. I'm mean and hateful and a flat-out money waster, and I have zero imagination. Except that we're talking about living comfortably within the house you have and making this space usable. Usable for crafting, which involves much more than paper. There has to be a limit to how much paper you can keep because you need room for other supplies and you need room to work. That drawer is the limit. Whether or not this is perfectly good paper. If that makes you mad, blame the drawer. If it makes you happy, blame me. Prioritizing container space. There's an entire chapter coming up about decluttering dreams, and in it, spoiler alert, I talk about crafting and how, as a dreamy, creative type, I think everything creative looks fun. This is a big factor in my clutter issues. But in this chapter, let's focus on the super practical, essential for making actual progress stuff. If your passion for creativity isn't completely focused on one hobby, this room, or shelf, or space, may not be big enough to store every last thing you've collected for the general category of hobbies. You're going to have to prioritize. Sorry. We've established that the size of your house is the size of your house. If it's important to you that bedrooms function as bedrooms, the kitchen functions as a kitchen and the living areas function as living areas, then this space you have available is the limit to the amount of hobby-related paraphernalia you can keep. Decide which hobbies get priority, starting with the craft slash sport slash hobby you do most. Not that you like most, but that you do most. Not that you wish you did most, but that you actually do the most. And not even the one you spent the most money on, but the one you actively experience either external or internal motivation to do, and then actually do. It gets space in the container first. It gets priority. Even if it's currently spread out all over the surfaces and not put away, if it gets used, it gets a space. But here's where some people get confused about the visibility rule. Following the visibility rule doesn't mean you can't clean out a cabinet or a drawer that isn't visible at first sight. It means your goal has to be to make visible progress. If something out in the open deserves a container but doesn't have one, you may need to eliminate something that's been invisible inside a container for years because you never use it. You've already got a trash bag and a donate box ready to go. And for the vast majority of those listening, your feet are attached to your legs and ready to take things where you'd look for them first. If you run across a potato masher in the beads and baubles drawer, take it to the kitchen. It could happen. Once you identify leatherworking as the hobby you do on a regular basis, you know leatherworking tools, fasteners, wooden hammers, markers, and so on, deserve container space. Consider which drawers are full of things for hobbies that deserve container space less than the leatherworking tools deserve it. You may have to acknowledge that your crochet supplies haven't been used in a while, or ever, or at least not as often as your leatherworking stuff. Suddenly, the ugly yarn you bought on sale reveals itself as ugly. You knew it was iffy when you bought it, but it was such a good deal. But now that you're viewing this space as a container, the iffy, ugly yarn, it's clearly less container-worthy than your leather mallets. So pull out the iffy, ugly yarn and stick it in the donate box. Consolidate things that are left until there's an open drawer for your leather supplies. Sometimes your eyes will be open to an entire drawer or shelf full of not gonna happens. I will never tell anyone that leatherworking is not a good thing to do. Even if leatherworking requires huge amounts of tools and supplies, leatherworking is a perfectly wonderful hobby for anyone who actually works leather. And that is the key, who actually works leather. Which hobby are you actually doing? That's the one that deserves shelf space. Other random thoughts about craft rooms and hobby spaces. When you only wish you had a hobby space, what if you have no hobby space but you desperately need one? Maybe you legitimately do your hobby consistently, but you have no place to put the supplies, so they sit in a corner of the dining area or on a card table in the living room. When you need to get the house ready for guests, those supplies and mid-project pieces get shoved somewhere. Wishing for a house with a craft room doesn't help, but viewing the house you have as a container does. If your hobby is something you do consistently, it deserves space in your home. Find that space by asking yourself what you're storing that doesn't deserve space. Maybe you're storing a collection of crystal bowls that you got for your wedding. If you've been married almost 20 years and you've never used those bowls, could you donate them and use that cabinet to store the supplies for the hobby you do on a regular basis? Or are you storing 6 tubs of baby clothes in the hall closet, even though your youngest child outgrew them a decade ago? If you kept only 1 tub of baby clothes, or none, but I'm trying to be nice, with your very favorite baby stuff, could you store your hobby supplies in that closet? On maintenance, I know your real question. I can declutter this space, but how do I keep it from going back to crazy town by next week? I totally get it. I know how it feels to work so hard on a space and then have it look like a tornado hit it just a few days later. One of the biggest benefits of just decluttering instead of organizing has been that recluttering doesn't happen as easily or as quickly. When I organized, I still had pretty much the same amount of stuff